Hi, this is Fred Tatasciore, and you're listening to the Fandom Podcast. Hulk Smash! You have to listen now! Listen now!
Welcome to the Fandom Podcast, episode 80. This is the show about the TV, movies, comics, and books that you love. Every week, we give you a little bit of geek news and then jump into the fandoms for discussion. This week, we're going to be recapping our Salt Lake Comic-Con experience. Before that, I am Brandon Uscio, and, you know, I fell asleep in this dark panel room, and now everyone's... Oh, wait, there's Nick, basking in the glory of catching four new Pokemon at Comic-Con.
Oh my gosh, it was like Pokemon Mecca, but my phone kept dying. So that was bad.
And still recovering from his costume is Jeff.
So, I understand that I wasn't wearing the most elaborate of costumes, but still wearing a leather jacket inside was probably not the best idea.
Yeah, I saw that there. I saw a Captain Cold.
Oh, man.
And I was like, that is dedication, because he was wearing that big heavy parka inside the Salt Palace.
Oh, my heavens. And it's not. I mean, there's a lot of bodies in there. I know there's a lot of space, but it is warm. I don't care.
And try wearing a jacket.
I know. I was like... I was sad for you, Jeff. I was sad for you.
That's why I wore it Thursday on the short day.
I was wearing a moisture wicking polo shirt, and that still I'm glad it was moisture wicking. Let's just say that.
It was a good looking shirt, I have to say. When it says manager right across the top, you know, it just gave it like 25 more bonus points.
I felt like a rock star a little bit, I think. Okay, so let's jump over into the random fandom.
You're a wizard.
You are entering the random fandom.
This one is sent in to us from Mike Bennett. He wrote in and said, when the first Star Wars movie came out, my wife and I went to see it in downtown Salt Lake City. The critic reviews were not so hot. And we went back after they upgraded the sound system, and we went back because it was still in the theater. As my wife likes to point out as an example of how much she loves me, the movie was in the theater for over 52 weeks, and the longest running was in Portland for 76 weeks. Anyway, we went back to see it 23 times in that 1 year. His wife must love him, because I can barely get my wife to go to a movie once with me. And it's got to be a good movie if I'm going to say, let's go out to the movie. So 23 times in 1 year. He says, it was at the Center Theater at the corner of State Street and 3rd South in 1977. Guys, have you ever seen a movie in the theaters that many times?
My record for most times seeing something in the theater was I went and saw Jurassic Park 10 times in the theater.
Oh, wow.
And it was with my friend. It was with my friend who dragged me along with him most of the time. But we were like, yeah, what should we do today? Let's go walk up to the Starship Theater and watch Jurassic Park. Okay. Like, we just did that like twice a week. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
My record's still Civil War with 4 times, but I mean, it's no 10. But yeah, I'm proud of my 4.
Mine is probably with Star Wars Episode 7. And I went and saw that about 5 or 6 times in the theater.
Didn't you see like Avengers twice in one day, Jeff?
No, I saw it every other day. I saw it opening day, and then 2 days later, and then again 2 days later. Because like my parents woke me up, you want to go see Avengers? Sure. And then we were talking about it so much at work that our coworker said, that's it, we're seeing this tomorrow. And so, yeah. But that's,
and then we saw it opening day with you. Yeah.
Because I got the early May birthday.
That's kind of how it was with me with Star Wars, is it was... I went to see it with different crowds of people.
Right.
So
I'm proud to say that every time I saw Civil War, someone in the group hadn't seen it yet. So
that's cool.
No, we're coming for moral support. I swear, it's just moral support. It's not because I want to see it 500 times.
Well, the two of those times were, I will pay for you. Like, I'm pretty sure I took my mom on Mother's Day. Like, I swear, she chose.
Such a good son.
I swear, such she chose. Son. Like, I let.
Is that like when Homer bought Marge a bowling ball for her birthday?
Kinda,
thinking that he would get a bowling ball out of it.
Here's the thing about my mom. Is that her philosophy when it comes to movies is you go there and you buy a bucket of popcorn and they let you watch a movie while you eat it.
And then you can fill up the popcorn again at the end of the theater, at the end of the movie.
So she's more happy about popcorn, but you know.
You know, that is very much how my family work with movies too. Like, it doesn't matter if we just came from a big dinner, you get a thing of popcorn because you're at the movies and you get popcorn when you're at the movies.
Of course.
I never ever was able to get popcorn or drinks or anything at the movies when I was young. And it is still weird for me to do it. Like, it's still kind of like this, oh, no, you don't do that. Because it was just like, we can't afford it. Be happy that you're at the movie. Like,
right.
You know, and so it's still very odd to me to get food at a movie theater.
Really, oh, for sure. I remember that as a kid too. Like, the only time that I would get popcorn as a kid was when I went with my grandparents, and quite frankly, that was pretty much the few times that we went was with my grandma, because it was like, okay, movies are expensive. They were a lot less expensive back then, but still they were expensive. And so we would get the popcorn. My grandma would get us the popcorn. And now my dad has very happily turned into grandpa mode, where he gets to take kids and stuff like
that's
that.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's 52 weeks.
That is a lot. That is a long, long time. Now is that,
that's a year. That's a whole year.
And that was at that same theater.
Yeah, 52. I don't know if he went and saw it 23 times.
He says it was in the theater for 52 weeks. Okay, so maybe not that theater. Anyway, that's still awesome.
He said the longest running was in Portland for 76 weeks.
What is the record for most longest show being, like Titanic or Avatar or what? I wonder what that is. Maybe Gone with the Wind?
Well, Gone with the Wind, they did movies different back then because they would take them from like town to town. It was almost like a road show.
I guess that's true, yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That probably would be in the longest. And that's also part of why Gone with the Wind made so much money, was because it went from town to town to town, and then it was the only movie in that town for the time.
Yeah, and it was a good movie.
Well, frankly, I don't give... Never. So, okay, yeah. So thank you, Mike, for writing in with the Random Fandom. If you want to contribute to the Random Fandom, go ahead and head over to fandompodcast.com/contact@fandompodcast.com or facebook.com/fandompodcast and send us what your Random Fandom is. See, they don't have to be obscure. Star Wars is pretty much the least obscure thing you can do nowadays.
I'm sorry, Star Wars? I'm not familiar. I heard Shatner's okay, but I mean, I'm kidding. That's the joke Phil Lamar made.
At Comic-Con, there was a Voices of Star Wars panel, and Phil Lamar made that joke. I felt so bad for Phil Lamar, though, because his mom was like, this is boring, and left.
Yeah, he told... That's, yeah.
Sad.
Yeah, and then he went to the other kids on the playground, and they were like, oh, yeah, do you remember when the Death Star blew up? And he was like, yeah, that was so cool. And he had to wait like 3 months or 4 months later to go see it again so that he could be a part of everything.
And now there's YouTube, so if a kid misses out on something, they can just, oh, what was this? And somebody's got something somewhere.
Sure, so, yeah. Kids these days, they have it, they so, have it so easy.
I know, isn't so it great? I clearly grew up in a different generation.
Yeah. Clearly. Well, so like my son, we'll be in the car and he'll have the iPad and he'll be like, I want to watch Netflix. And I don't have data on my iPad.
Or Wi-Fi in your car. They have that now.
They, meaning people with money. And that is not me.
Are you kidding me? Brandon has kids and an iPad. He can't afford a car with Wi-Fi.
I still don't have a car from this century, okay? Come on.
Hey, neither do I. Wait, no. I just got one.
I did too. This decade.
Car that I drive.
I'll first, say like this two decade. Or three cars I've owned were all older than me. I've only recently got a car that's younger.
My first car that I ever bought with my own money was really a lot older than me, but it was a 67 Mustang.
Oh, well.
So I'm that cool. Just
see, your random fandom can even be a car, and we will start geeking out about that.
Yeah, so. I bought it from the original owner, and he's this old man. It was awesome. I was 17. Saved all my money so I could buy that awesome car. It had internal cancer, but it was great.
That car was literally cancer.
It broke down during dates like so many times, like that. Like I got to the point where it was like I would find out if this girl was somebody that I would keep around just because she was either super annoyed that my car was like broken and was like, oh, this is stupid and blah blah blah. I was like, I don't want you around. Or they were like, oh, it's okay. And then they like come out and help me, and I was like, I'm hanging on to this one. You know, like that was like one of the ways that I could gauge whether or not I...
You stole that from the Karate Kid.
Actually, I never even thought about that. That is so funny. Oh, that's so funny. Oh, but no, yeah. There was one... Okay, so there was one girl that my car broke down and I said, okay, we just need to push it out. And she... And I was like, okay, all you need to do is turn the car, you know, and it didn't have... power steering, and so you've got to crank that sucker. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to push it out. And we started pushing it out, and she did not put on the brakes, and she ran the car right into the back of somebody else's car. I was like, all you needed to do. And I like ran around the other side of the car and tried to push it, but there was, you know, I mean, it's heavy and I'm pushing it by myself. Oh man.
To be fair,
I had a little ding on the back
to
corner.
Be fair, you told her all you have to do is turn the wheel. You didn't tell her feet were involved.
That's true.
She did exactly what you said, Nick.
I just said, hey, you know what? This is what we're doing. I'm going to push it out. Just turn it out and whatever. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what I said, but yeah, that was actually right in front of the house of my friend that I was talking about that I went to go see Jurassic Park with 10 times.
Full circle.
So, it came first. It was in front of his house at a party at his house. Anyway.
All right. So,
we derailed it on that one. Jeez.
Well, we're just off the tracks. I've accepted that. So, why don't we jump into the top news? Okay. So, our number one news story is that the Walking Dead video game season 3 will be coming out here very soon. Jeff, do both you and Nick play this?
I played it. I haven't played all of them, but I've played it. It's really fun.
Okay, I have not played this very... I've not played any of it. I've heard it's really good. This is the one that Telltale Games does,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's the better one. The one they tried making with... because they made a console version where you were Daryl Dixon, and that game was just annoyingly bad. Like, there was no difficulty change. There was no... Like, the second you made a noise, an entire herd was on you. It was just bad. It was just a poorly put together game. It felt kind of rushed. But hey, you get to be Daryl Dixon. This game is, it's by Telltale. If you've played the recent Batman one, it's very similar to that. It's more story driven. You make decisions. Action is actually kind of hard in this format, so this doesn't focus as much on that. And it's, you know, it's just a really good game. It's a great game.
It's very, very story driven. So if you like playing video games with a really good story and your actions change the story as time goes on, and so it has a lot of replayability because you can be like, well, this time I'm going to save this person instead of this person, and it changes.
That's kind of funny
game.
You say it like that, because I had thought that same thing. Like, okay, I'm going to beat it this time, and then I'm going to go through and make different decisions. And at the end of the first season, I was so like bummed by the ending. I was just like, oh, I don't want to have to do that again.
That's funny.
I've heard that from people who play that game. I haven't played it, but I've heard that you get so emotionally attached to the characters, and it's The Walking Dead, so characters die.
And how.
Yeah. And how.
Yep. And then the people that you don't like usually end up surviving, and you try to kill them off, and those decisions make it so they live. Like, they purposely do that in the game. So just keep that in mind when you're playing it. Like, if you're trying to kill someone off, usually it's not good to try to kill them. You just do the opposite of that, and then they usually end up dying eventually.
That is too funny that they did that, because I can completely see them trolling the nerds that way. Okay. Our next news story is that Greg Berlanti and the WB are shopping around a Black Lightning TV series. Do either of you, before they started talking about this, did either of you really know who Black Lightning was?
I did from a cartoon, and I don't remember which one it is, but there was...
He was in an episode of Justice League Unlimited.
Okay, that's exactly what it's... that's what it's got to be, because I watched that.
There's an animated movie called Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, and he is a character in there, and he has one line. And it's like, his line is, I think I can create a force field around it. And that's the only thing he says in the...
It's the only thing he says
in that whole movie, and they got LeVar Burton to say that line. And I've always thought, you probably could have saved some money on just hiring literally anybody to say that line. Not that...
Even if you wanted to hire a voice actor and tell them, hey, we want you to sound like
absolutely
LeVar Burton.
Like, we want a LeVar Burton type, but we can't afford LeVar Burton.
Did they put him on the package?
I know he's credited.
That's a big selling point, too. Yeah, like if he's credited and they put it, like if they could put his name, you know, where it says all the names on the front.
Oh, I don't think that's that. Like, I mean, it's on my shelf. I could just...
Well, so here's another thing to think about is that the Black Lightning character was DC's first main black character. So... After hearing LeVar Burton speak at the last FanEx and, you know, seeing some of the things he's done, I could see him saying, I want to be this superhero. And since he's in Hollywood, going to somebody and be like, hey, put this character in. I will voice him for free. I want him, you know, he was a part of my life or something. I don't know. I'm speculating here. But I could see that happening too. So maybe it didn't cost him
too
much
better.
Money.
That's my headcanon now. LeVar Burton voluntarily did it to maybe get a
spinoff.
Or just that he really loved the character and he just was like, I want to be part of this.
Imagine like the web headlines if that were like a little bit more popular nowadays. You know, Kunta Kinte plays Black Lightning. So
don't take my word for it.
Oh, I love that show. Both of those shows actually are really good. So guys, what point do you think that Greg Berlanti is going to be stretched too thin?
Two seasons of Arrow ago.
So he has Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl. And he's doing another show that's, I want to say it's not DC related. And then now this other DC TV property. So do you guys think it's going to be an issue, or do you think that he's still trying to manage each of these shows, or do you think he is like handing it off to others?
Well, he's got to. There's no...
I hope
my gosh. Can you imagine?
I hope that he's...
I couldn't even imagine doing
he's
that.
He's putting the work into it, and then he'll find somebody who can take the reins, kind of. You know, like, he'll make it what he thinks it should be, and then he'll hand it off to directors and writers like Kevin Smith and say, go. I trust you. That's true. Your thing.
What if he handed off to David Goyer? No, you mean the guy who said that going to Batman v Superman is where you go when you're out of ideas wouldn't do a good job? I'm shocked.
Oh, don't. We don't have time to get on that movie.
we've already talked into that in length.
Well, I think at that point the fans would be like, "You failed this city."
As soon as it starts getting bad, the fans are gonna get really on top of him, and maybe he'll get a clue, but maybe he won't because DC never did. Well, they kind of have now.
They can't. A long time. They can't hire the writer of Batman v Superman. That would be them acknowledging that their TV series exists.
That's true.
No, we're just going to stick with having two Flashes.
You know? When I saw that thing, that was my first thought. Like, another one? Really? Are we going to be able to sustain the numbers of all of these shows and still have, like, critical success? You know, like, I mean, that's a lot of shows to watch. I'm already struggling watching all four of them. I've got rid of one of them almost completely, or I'll just watch the final like four episodes and then I'm like, okay, I've seen the whole season. That's what I do with Arrow now.
I'm gonna give Arrow another shot now that Flashpoint is gonna be messing some stuff up.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, there's just so much to watch and I just don't have time to watch it all.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I think that CW is playing it really smart because they're planning on a couple crossovers per season with all of their shows and some with just a couple of them, and that is just enough to keep you hooked into the other series, I think. Because, you know, if you like this one, then you're going to want to watch this both parts of the crossover.
I think they need to start leaning into more how Marvel is doing with Civil War, how that started with Civil War. How, yes, this is technically Captain America's movie, but it's also got all these other heroes. You know, Thor has already been confirmed that Hulk will be a part of it. So it's, you know, yes, of course. But so, yeah, you got to just keep... It's okay that the show is still called Arrow or Flash, but... You know, make it an ensemble. They did a really smart thing last season, I think it was, where they had two episodes. They had one episode per show, Arrow and Flash, but the intros had both Arrow and Flash's logo on there saying that this is a combined show. This isn't Arrow on Flash and this isn't Flash on Arrow. It's a team up. And if they can do more stuff like that, I think they're going to be fine.
You know, I think you're probably right there.
Of course I'm right.
Of course you're right. No, we didn't doubt you for a minute there, Jeff.
We didn't doubt him, did we? I doubted myself. to be fair.
No, notice how I'm being very quiet during this.
There's a lot of times where I'll keep talking and I think, oh, they stopped listening. They're off on something else.
So are you still talking?
No, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. Adding to the pile of superhero shows, and now this one luckily is not in the same universe. This one will be on the Sci-Fi Channel, but there is a Superman prequel series called Krypton that is going to follow around Seg-El, who is Kal-El's grandfather, who's trying to keep Krypton from basically destroying itself. Spoiler alert, it doesn't
work. I guess that's
work.
One problem with a series like this. All his efforts are immediately like, well, we know you. But, you know. But it's also...
Yep. No,
Prequelitis, big time in that one.
So they cast their... they cast its female lead, and she is relatively unknown. She is... She's from across the pond, as they would say, and starred in British TV series, in a couple of them. But the one that she's most known for is the show Freak. And, you know, she's got a couple things under her under her belt. And she won a BAFTA TV award for Best Leading Actress. So she sounds like she's going to be pretty good. I'm kind of excited about this because Krypton is something that has not really been done on TV a lot. I mean, there have been a couple mentions of it, but it'll be interesting to see how they do this. And Sci-Fi has been doing okay with like trying to get back to its roots of sci-fi.
Sharknado 12. I'll give it a shot. I'll see what happens. But like I said, I've got so many other shows. So Sci-Fi, I'll probably have to wait until it comes out on whatever Netflix or Hulu or whatever they put it out on. I probably won't be able to watch it live. So if they distribute it good, then I'll binge it.
At what point do you think that every network is going to have an app and do the
not
Netflix
soon
style,
enough.
Just that dump is... it all at once? Because I tell you, that's how our generation wants to watch TV, is they want to just watch it all just in one time, one place.
Yeah, and they actually talked about that in the Arrow panel at Comic-Con, how he has to like recap the episode at the beginning, and I had never really even thought about that. Like, he's like, yeah, you know, we have to do that at the beginning of every show so that...
Exposition.
And I was like, maybe that's why I get so mad every time I'm watching it, like binging it, and I'm like, ah,
so
no,
you think they
don't
should,
waste my time. You know?
They should release a binging cut where they...
Ooh, that would be so cool. Yeah. I would love that.
Arrow, the binge cut. Director's edition.
There you go. Oh my gosh, brilliant. Jeff, get a raise. Give the... Yes, the binge cut. Yes, why not, dude? Let's do it.
I like that idea a lot, actually.
That is such a brilliant idea. When it gets put on to the CW seed, so that everyone can just binge it after it's aired, they cut out all those stupid scenes.
You don't mean the previously on Arrow.
Previously on Arrow.
See, I don't mind that as much, because it's like, okay, that's...
No, like,
that's how you did it. But I mean... It
helps me remember.
That's like what they do with the first page of the comic books, or at least in Marvel Comics. This is what's going on.
Well, and the other thing that's nice about that is sometimes they reference something that was like 4 seasons ago that you can't remember. And then because they said previously on 4 seasons ago, Felicity said this. And you're like, oh, yeah. And then it makes sense when that happens in the episode. But then you're expecting something to be related to that as well.
Hey, remember when we talked about this giant monster possibly attacking? And then within 5 minutes, oh, no, there's a giant monster attacking. And I go, well, you set it up pretty well. Thanks.
So there's pros and cons to that as well. We need a binge cut.
I'll get on it. Someone buy me a video editing software and I'll get on it.
Hey, you have video editing software on your computer. You own a Mac.
Oh, yeah. All right. Someone buy me all 3-4 seasons of Arrow. You know what's funny? A while ago...
That would be a really hard project.
A while ago, I actually tried watching Arrow again, and it just was like, there's better stuff to be watching. But the first few episodes, he had a lot of voiceover. Like, while he was just working, Stephen Amell had a lot of talking. Well, he would when there wouldn't be just silence in the show. I get it why, but it's like, oh, that's why they introduced Diggle. So he had someone to talk to. Yeah. That's an interesting anecdote.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Speaking of online streaming, we've got a lot of media coming out to watch. A new series has been announced by Netflix called The White Rabbit Project, and it stars Grant Imahara, Carrie Byron, and Tori Belleci, which, if you remember, they were the build team on Mythbusters. They were cut from Mythbusters for the last season because they needed to save some money, and so they cut them. And they are starting... It looks like their non-compete is finally finished up, because now they are at Dragon Con this year. They announced that they are getting back together for the White Rabbit Project, which they pitched as they tackle the subjects that you find when you go down the rabbit hole on the internet. And so it's things like the clip that they showed at Dragon Con was Tori and Carrie sitting down for some wine, except Tori is strapped up to a bunch of wires and Carrie is attempting to control his arm movements remotely. So, you know, think about the show Whose Line Is It Anywhere, and the funny thing they do when they replace the person's arms with the one who can't really see.
Oh, yeah.
And now add in remote control to that as well.
I love Whose Line Is It Anyway, and I love those episodes. It doesn't sound very sciencey to me. I think it's...
That's why it's on Netflix.
I wonder if it's not going to be as much science like Mythbusters was, and it's just going to be like, we're going to try to do this, and we're not going to explain how we're trying. I don't know.
See, I didn't feel like they were very sciencey on Mythbusters, or at least the build team. The build team was about building cool stuff.
And blowing stuff up.
And so I think that this one is more of the, holy crap, somebody's talking about this on the internet. Let's try this out.
Above all, it's going on Netflix, so it's not like... It's something that you can, if you have a day to kill, you can probably watch it all. Or even, fall in the rabbit hole.
I'm excited. I was sad Mythbusters got put off the air, but they were really struggling at the end to find more myths. Like, I think that's really the reason why it kind of started ending. Is it was like, well, we can't really find anything else to bust or confirm, so let's just kind of start doing weird stuff. Like, they were having James Bond episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And those were cool. But it's like, yeah, it's movies. We don't believe it's going to happen anyway. And it was kind of cool to see it. And there was a lot. Yeah, it got less and less about the science of like, hey, we're going to try to do something cool. And they were just blowing stuff up all the time, which is kind of fun, too. But,
you know, some of my favorite myths that they did were the historical ones, though.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know,
the rocket, the Civil War rocket. That one was awesome. And the trying to blind or burn down a ship with mirrors.
Yeah. The Galileo death ray.
I loved those ones. Yeah.
Yeah, those ones were awesome. The paper samurai armor and all that stuff that they did. Yeah, it was... So I'm excited to see what they do, because they always... Part of the reason I loved Mythbusters was because I like science. I love testing things. I love proving things. You know, I like that. That's kind of the premise of Mythbusters. But another big part of me is I am a maker. I like to make things. I like to be like, what? Well, I've got this problem. What can I build to fix this?
And that's exactly what the build team was, is they were the build team. They would build things to fix certain problems. And they just, they had a good chemistry together. There was the one season where Carrie was out on maternity that, you know, they had brought in somebody temporarily. And I just didn't think they had as good of chemistry. Okay, well, I think that is, we did a good job covering the top news. Or if we didn't do a good job, we at least did a job covering the top news. So now, with our main discussion being about Salt Lake Comic Con, we are going to give you the binge cut of Comic Con.
Copyright pending.
Patent pending.
No. It's patent pending. It's been produced. It is pending. The binge cut is ours, although there's probably somebody else who has something called a binge cut. But in this context, it's ours.
I'm sorry, ours?
Oh, man. He's already going Ringo on us.
You never go full Ringo?
Oh, yes.
Okay, Ringo.
Jeez! So we're gonna be talking about Salt Lake Comic Con. The people who didn't go, we're going to try to give you a little bit of a taste of what Comic-Con is like. The people who did go, we're going to try to make it so that you know the things that we saw, and hopefully you saw the same things we saw, maybe even more, because I had a great time. And, you know, let's start out with the press conference. Nick, I know you were there for the press conference. They did it at the Vivint Arena this year. I was over it at the Salt Palace getting some access control setups. That was kind of a minor detail. Like, we had to have that working before people could get into the building. So what did you think of the press conference? Tell us a little bit about that.
It was pretty cool. They brought out a whole bunch of the people that were there. Like, they had all these celebrities come out, and then they said, okay, well, you know, these are real life heroes. And they brought out a bunch of people from the Salt Lake City Police Department, and they brought out Lou Ferrigno, and they said Lou Ferrigno has done a lot of work with law enforcement, and he has been deputized at, and I don't remember the exact number, but it was very impressive, like 30, 40, 50 other precincts around the nation had deputized Lou Ferrigno so that he could be part of, you know, helping the law enforcement in these cities and stuff. And so they said, we are going to do that today. And the sheriff of the Salt Lake City Police Department came out and swore him in as a deputized, officer. And then they said, but one thing that Lou Ferrigno has never done is he's also worked really extensively with child slavery and sex slavery and stuff like that, but he has never
been in the cause of stopping it. I think we should clarify that.
What? Yeah. But like, yeah. working with teams to stop that sort of thing. And he said, but he's never been deputized for, you know, special ops. And so we are going to do that right now. And you could see, like, Lou Ferrigno was like, really? Like, I don't know if he knew or not. I think maybe he did.
He's just that good of an actor.
But he was super, it was super cool. Like, he came out, and then at the very end, they had this little quib where it was like, and if anybody does this, I will smash them. It wasn't part of the official, you know, swearing in thing or whatever, but they did.
It's just funny because he was, you know, the Hulk.
For the fanboys. Yes.
Okay, yeah, so I have this new reality TV show idea that just came to mind. Lou Ferrigno,
cops,
law enforcement, or, you know, I'm still workshopping it here a little bit, but
yeah, no,
it's kind of like Dog the Bounty Hunter when he's going about his day being a bounty hunter, but Lou Ferrigno going out there being like, I'm going to smash you.
We got to get him in full makeup, though. Could you imagine being arrested by the Hulk?
He could just wear like a police uniform, and, you know, the patch that they have on the side that says, you know, Salt Lake City, the police department, it should just be a big green fist, and that's all that's on that
yes.
patch. That's all it needs to be.
We're going to be millionaires.
Special deputy.
Codename Hulkster.
I think that's taken.
How about Big Green?
Fair enough.
Codename Big Green.
Big Green, this is Thin Blue. Come in.
Guy, we got a 4445. Copy, over.
Big Green, we need you at the stat. I'm on my way.
Was that your Lou Ferrigno?
No.
It okay, just, it sounded like, yeah, sound like Arnold
talking
Schwarzenegger.
In a buff man. It's kind of, yeah. He's like majority deaf. Like, he's very deaf. And so when he talks, he does kind of, yeah, he's a good man.
He has had, you know, he is one of those guys who's just awesome. He's got a lot of, he's had a lot of obstacles in his life that he's overcome. And he's a really inspiring guy when you get down and read it. I'm a little young to have known the TV show very well. But I turn it on in syndication right now, and it's still a fun one. And Lou Ferrigno is going to be the last person to ever play the Hulk without having to add CG.
Yeah, so, for sure. And he still is huge.
Yeah, he's terrifying. A monster still. I really like that guy. And it's funny how Comic-Con does that, is you like things because you get to see the actors behind the scenes a little bit more and see what kind of people they are. So even if things that you were, before you were like, I don't know that I really like that, once you get to know the actors and actresses behind it, you're like, you know what? I got to go check that out.
That was a theme for this con for me, is there was a lot of people that I was like, I don't know if I really want to go to that panel. And then I was like, I'll try this one out. And then all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch this show now. And it was a lot of people.
Okay, so Lou Ferrigno gets deputized. What else happened?
I don't think there was really anything else other than that everyone was waiting for, you know, Mark Hamill to come out. But it kind of seemed like that was the only thing they really announced at the. Am I missing one?
No, I don't. I wasn't there.
I caught Jess Arnell saying, "How's it feel to have the best Comic Con in the world?"
Oh yeah, he said that at the end, or right before they deputized. But he says that every time that somebody gives him a microphone.
But not at other conventions necessarily. They love Salt Lake. Like I had a chance to talk to some of the people involved in booking him, and I guess in other conventions they are lucky to pull 1,000 people into their Twisted Tunes panel. And in Salt Lake, they get over 5,000 people in there.
There was more in that panel than any other panel.
Absolutely.
Maybe the only other one that would be close would be Luna Lovegood from Harry Potter. But every other one, I went to a lot of big name panels. Like John Cena didn't have as many. Yeah, Danny Trejo, he didn't have as many people in his. Like there were people that I was like, I think that this is going to be a pretty packed panel. And then it was 3/4 full. But yeah, definitely Twisted Tunes had the most that I
You know who had a attended. 3/4 full panel that kind of shocked me a little bit? Mark Hamill.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. That's
seeing
true,
empty seats.
That was kind of weird to me, too. Like, I agree. I got there pretty early. I mean, I got there significantly early. And luckily, Amy Champion, being the champion that she is, woke up bright and early and had a seat
for
me.
She was there and saying, this is where my seat is, before I had even got on tracks. I was like, okay, go Amy, you know.
And they were good seats. We were like kitty corner from the stage. So, you know, we weren't faced directly on one side or the other. There was not a bad seat in that freaking place, which I think was awesome. And that's one of the reasons why it was really cool having it at the Vivint Smart Home Arena. But yeah, there was like a half hour until the panel started. And I was like, this is only half people. Half full. I wonder how many people are coming. It did fill up significantly more, and there were people above that just didn't want to sit below, I guess, even though
there
were seats.
There might have been, like they didn't want to have to fight through a row, so they might as well just, like, I can just go to this seat.
Sure,
you know
I can
mean?
See it.
There were a lot of people, though, in the upper bowl.
Yeah, I think that a lot of those could have filled in the bottom a little better.
Yeah, but they were probably stragglers and whatnot, like latecomers.
I think what killed it is that it was announced late, and it was on Thursday morning, because I've always tried to work a half day and then go... You know, like say, okay, I'm going to leave at 11 today from work, and then I can be to the event at 1. And this time, the exact same thing happened. My son had a doctor's appointment at 9, and so Lena was not able to attend the Mark Hamill panel because his appointment didn't end until like 10:30, and so she couldn't even get on tracks or anything. And she literally arrived at the end of the panel. There. And so I think that the time that it was, even though it was the only time they could have had it, you know, and it was really smart for them to do it at that time, because then we don't have to walk 4 blocks to the arena to go to Mark Hamill's panel and then go back to the, you know, Salt Palace. I think that really did hinder it in some ways.
So the way that those logistics worked out is that Mark Hamill, he was only available on Thursday.
Yeah, and I get that.
He was already going to Toronto for their Fan Expo. And, you know, Dan Farr, he made it happen, and they spent a lot of money getting him there. And, you know, he is not a cheap celebrity to get either. He has a pretty big guarantee. And so they had to sell a bunch, you know, the superfan packages, they had to sell a bunch of those in order to recoup some of the costs there. And I'm sure that they made some money on it, but that was kind of the time that you had to do, because he did his panel and then he was taken over to photo ops, and that was basically all he did all day long, was sit there and meet people at photo ops and then get their pictures taken.
He handed them an autograph.
Some of them he would hand it to them. You know, some of them didn't necessarily get the pre-signed picture, but yeah, it was, you know, there were a lot of people who were able to get pictures with Mark Hamill. It was a lot of people had a good day that day.
Yeah, I was just giddy to be in the same room as him. And he is an entertainer. Like, he was just so genuine and just, like, he made me love him even more than I already did. And that's really hard to do, you know? And some of the highlights of the panel for me were when he talked about why he made Luke Skywalker so whiny. And that he actually had this vision for the character. And so whenever somebody makes fun of him for being like, I want to get a Tashi Station pair of some power converters, he's like, dude, I did that on purpose. Because, you know, Luke Skywalker needed to come from being this young, you know, bratty kid to this growth of blowing up the Death Star and, you know, eventually more. And they didn't know at that time that they were going to do three movies. They hoped, but it was a new
hope. It's been almost 40 years. I'm sure he can come up with more excuses.
No, but it made so much sense to me, and even watching the shows and, you know, looking at it in that perspective and seeing that even though he was this young actor that was kind of like unknown, he was still really invested in the character. And that sort of dedication is what has made it so timeless. Like, if he had just been like, oh, this movie's not going to go anywhere, I'm just going to, you know, say my lines and be done, you know, it wouldn't have been as good. And who knows, maybe it wouldn't be as big as it is. But yeah, like, it just made me love him even more. I was just like, this is awesome.
Yeah, he was a great guy. You know, my favorite part about that panel was probably, you know, just the fact that he got up there and he genuinely wanted to talk to us, and he was genuinely grateful that we were there. Like, I felt like it would be really easy for a star to come out and be like, yes, give me love, give me attention, give me your money, I deserve this.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna say it.
Wait, did I say
you
that out
weren't
loud?
I was.
I didn't make it to that panel either, so I can't speak to that. But he came out and he was genuinely touched that people were there to see him. And it's like, yeah, people will be there to see you. So I really, really enjoyed that panel. It was really cool. So I was able to sit with the staff in that section, which means I was about 10 rows back. And that was really cool, but I got bummed out at one point because I got given a badge for the celebrity row area so that I could go fix stuff back there. And somebody told me after that that I was... That badge entitled me to a seat in the first three rows. I could have been in the splash zone.
He would have spit on you and you would have been like, I'm never showering again. I don't know. I don't know if it would have been good to be that close, though, because he kept wandering to the edges of the stage and you couldn't have seen him the whole time. Plus, when his dog was over there, get in the way. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I would have been died to be in the front row. I'm just trying to give myself a little, you know.
You know, as it was, I was still close enough that it was better to look at him on the stage than it was to look at the Jumbotron. So I'm happy about that for sure.
I love when he said, it's really crazy to me to be here and to have all this love. It's still awe-inspiring. It's still crazy to me because in 3 days, I'm going to be home picking up dog poop and my wife's going to be telling me to take out the trash, just like all of, you know, anybody else. And I was just like, you know what? You get it. You know, like, you're just awesome.
My favorite part was when he said, you guys are all here listening and waiting for me to give you a small bit piece of information that I am contractually obligated not to tell you.
I loved how he said that he loves messing with fans. He was like, at one point I said, you know, hey, I love Daisy Ridley like a daughter. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. He was like, no, that's not what I meant. He said, so, you know, I decided to start sending out tweets to, like, John Boyega on his birthday, who played Finn. You are sensational.
Clue or typo, like, you choose.
So that was a good panel, and I liked how he said that, you know, we keep the secrets not because we're mean and we like to play with your guys' emotions, but because we want you guys to have the best experience in the world when you go down and sit in that theater, which tells me that Mark Hamill's official opinion is you should not be spoiled.
And I love him even more.
Also, he'd probably be fined literally all of his money if he let anything slip.
Oh, I don't know about all of it, but pretty close.
But you know what? I really do believe that he believes that. Like, I really think that
it can
he
be both
feels that way. Even though he will lose a lot of money if he lets something slip, like they kind of did in the Arrow panel, which was hilarious. But I really do believe that he, you know, feels that way because, you know, he was a kid. You know, he was a fan of movies and stuff like that. And so he's like, you know, this is how I feel. And this is what I want to give to the other people. And he even kind of was like, I want it in the, I like that he emphasized in the theater. Like, that is where this needs to be, you know, found out. Not sitting in your basement looking at a computer screen. Like, it is so much more impactful and cool in the theater to experience these emotions. And I agree 100%.
Okay, so is there anything else you guys want to talk about with the Hamill panel before we move on to our other favorites?
I loved his stories about playing the Joker and how he admitted and actually researches and is aware of all of the other people that play the Joker, and he kind of has a kinship with him. in a way. Even if he doesn't directly know them, he knows of them and their work and has studied it and like appreciates it. And I loved his stories about how he literally did not know anything else about The Killing Joke when he was recording it, because he was doing episode 8 and they said, okay, we're just going to record all your lines. And he just went to his trailer and recorded them all. And so he didn't know any context of anything. And the first time that he sat down to watch the show, he was like, this show's not even about the Joker. Like, wait, did I miss something?
Yeah, they
like,
thought they sent him the wrong disc.
Yeah, he's like, this is all about Batgirl. Wait, whoa, what's going on with Batman and Batgirl? Like, he was like, what is the show? And he said, he admitted that he was going to be doing a press conference about it in a few days. And so he said, I really need to watch the show so that I know what I'm talking about. And it was super late after he'd had this big, long, like, you know,
effects scene heavy
that he
scene.
Had done. Yeah, he said, effects heavy scene. And he said, I probably shouldn't have said that. And then he couldn't go to bed that night, not because it was scary, but he was like, wow, that is a lot to take in at one time. Like, you know, and wow, we really went there. And I didn't realize that the things I was saying or doing, that was the context of what I was
doing.
Even
at one point said, don't let your kids watch it. You know, it's rated that for
rated
a reason.
R for a reason.
Just because it's Batman and Joker.
Yeah.
Just because it's a cartoon.
Well, you know, that made me think about something or that Troy Baker said later in another panel when he was talking about doing the Joker and kind of filling in for Mark Hamill. Well, not filling in because he's his own Joker, but Mark Hamill wasn't able to finish doing the Arkham games. And so Troy Baker came in, became the Joker. And he's like, after, and he starts talking about cosplayers, because Joker cosplayers can understand this. By the time that you are done with the day of being the Joker, you're just like, I just want to watch a cartoon. I just want to watch something happy. I just want to, you know, because the Joker is so dark.
Makes me appreciate the actors that play him even more so.
I would imagine it's changed over the years, though, because I can't imagine that Cesar Romero felt yucky after playing the Joker.
Oh, he was just really mad that they had to put white on his mustache, and that really, really upset
him. Could you imagine that nowadays? We'd like you to play the Joker. You're going to have to shave. Absolutely not. Like, could you, like, okay, then we'll find someone else, you know? Nowadays, it's, we want you to be the Joker. I'm in. What parts do you need removed?
How much weight do you need me to lose?
Weight gain? Weight loss? Shave? No shave? What do you need? Tattoos? I'll get tattoos.
Like, complete facial reconstruction surgery.
We need you to look exactly, we need you to look and sound exactly like Heath Ledger. Okay. And we need the scars to be real. Okay.
You know, Mark Hamill has definitely had a lot of different characters. I like how in this panel he touched on as many of the fandoms, even All in the Family, as he could.
So. Yeah, he was great. I mean, I came away from that completely satisfied, and it was like the ultimate. It was the ultimate way to start the con, but it was kind of sad because it couldn't get any better. So everything else was
I'm
just
sorry.
Kind of like
what Comic Con did you go to? I'm not saying it got better, but
there was a lot of really cool stuff. But I think that there was one other thing that was a bigger highlight to me than that one.
Okay, well then, why don't...
Well, three for you, but not for me. So we can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, well, you know, let's do talk about that. I've got one last thing to say on the Mark Hamill panel that I think sums up pretty much everybody who was there. There was a little snafu with some of the... over at the Salt Palace, just like 15 minutes before the panel was supposed to start. And the person that I was talking to, she like lost it. She's like, if I have to miss this panel to go deal with this... everybody who's involved is getting fired. I don't care if I have the authority to do that or not. You are getting fired if this is an issue. Not to me, but just like she was like, I am not missing this panel. And afterwards she was like, oh, I'm so sorry for blowing up like that. I was like, you know what? No, I got it. I understand, because that's kind of how I think we all felt. If we have to miss this panel, heads will roll.
The one more thing that I just thought of. At the end of the panel, when they said, it's over, Mark Hamill said, the next time I come, we'll do it for 2 hours.
The best part about that is as soon as he said, next time I come, the room erupts. He didn't even get to finish his sentence. Like, we don't care what you say. Next time you come, we're in. We're in.
Yeah, so
we'll be here. We'll wait.
Apparently he liked Salt Lake, which seems to be a theme with most celebrities who come to Salt Lake City. And so, yeah, I'll be there.
I'm excited. Yeah, I am excited about that. Okay, so let's jump in. So Mark Hamill was obviously like the highlight for me.
Okay, Mark Hamill was very... I'm not trying to tone down Mark Hamill. I'm just saying that I wasn't disappointed with the other 3 days. You know what I mean?
That's true. No, okay. I wasn't disappointed either, but that was the highlight of my con. Wait, okay, there's one other thing that I think was the highlight.
Let's first talk about some of the panels that we went to, and some of, and then we'll wrap it up with each sharing a couple of the highlights of our convention.
Sounds great.
So I didn't get to many panels, so I am going to go first as to my favorite panels, and I'm going to have to, it's a little bit cheating. I will narrow it down to one, but the voice actor panels,
those
were the ones that I always went to.
It's so easy to just love them. Like, it's so easy to just get caught up and just be like, this is so entertaining. And it's just so fun to listen to them talk about what they're doing.
So the James Arnold Taylor panel is the one that I'm going to narrow it down to. It was Saturday at 5. I was starting to get exhausted. It was a dark room, so I was not able to stay in through the entire one. I also had some stuff that I had to go take care of. But he put on such a good show. Like, at the beginning when he was talking about, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a voice actor, and I wanted to be, you know, these characters, I wanted to make them real, and then he becomes the voice. And he goes from talking up here to, I am now talking down here. And
it was masterful. Like, you were literally watching Michael Jordan play basketball.
Against himself.
You know, Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel. Like, that's how I felt. I was like, this is the, you know, height of this profession. Like, watching this guy perform was just awe-inspiring.
Yes, and it was so choreographed and so timed. It was not like, so most of the panels that you go to are just people up there shooting the breeze. They, you know, they may have a little bit of a presentation where they have like pictures or something like that, and they're like, oh yeah, this, you know, like this picture. So the first panel that I went to was an R2 Builders panel, which was awesome, but it wasn't nearly anything by James Arnold Taylor. And if you guys are trying to remember who he is, he's done a billion voices. The one that he is probably the most famous for is Obi-Wan in all of the cartoons. Clone Wars. Yeah. So he is Obi-Wan is the biggest one in my head, at least. But he's done a ton of voices, and he got up there. He had sound effects. He had audio portions of it. He had video going in the background. You know, the thing was called Talking to Myself. And so he went from, you know, your standard panel experience is people talking and enjoying themselves and it's really cool, to him talking, telling you about what it's like to be a voice actor and doing it in such a rehearsed and prepared way that it was just a great show. Like, this was something that would have been awesome to do in a theater just on its own. Like,
yeah, I wondered if that was the case. I wonder if that, like, he has that show and he just brought it.
I'm sure.
Like,
I'm sure it was.
I think that he has done that many times.
I'm sure it's something that, I'm sure a college could say, hey, James, we want you to do your Talking to Myself thing. Because at the end of it, he has a really good inspirational message.
Great way
message.
To end the con. So, and even Chris Provost said that. He was like, I cannot think of a better way to have the con end.
It's time for the cosplay contest.
With that message. Sorry,
just the end of that panel where he was going through voice after impression after character in the pictures, you know, all you gotta do, you change your voice like this, and having their picture on the screen, that was I'd probably pay just to see that show again. Not Comic-Con prices, but I'd pay to see, I wouldn't pay my VIP pass again to see just that, but it's still a great show if you ever get a chance.
There were other, like, I was looking at Facebook, and there were people who took pictures of the other voice actors sitting in that panel and watching it because they wanted to see
it. Oh, cool.
Even Jess Harnell, he said that, like, in the other panel, like, everyone was asking him, what superhero would you be? And he's like, James Arnold Taylor. And they were like, what?
And we thought he was joking.
I want to be James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah. You know, I thought he was joking. And I thought it was partially to get people to ask them questions. I felt a little bad on the Voices of Marvel panel because it turned into the Jess Harnell panel.
You mean Jess Harnell and his amazing friends?
Yeah, exactly. Because first off, there were, like, no Marvel questions. People were just there because they're like, we want to see these voice actors.
James Arnold Taylor even brought that up. Are we contractually obligated to even talk about Marvel at all?
Well, and then they started like just bringing it up randomly just to get a laugh.
Troy Baker pointed out, there's a guy from Disney in the back just going, come on, just one, just one.
Oh my gosh, his impression
is Jeff Goldblum.
Of Jeff Goldblum is so, so good. Everyone go watch Twisted Tunes. I don't think it's probably posted yet.
Posted yet, but you can believe that we will post the link to it on YouTube as soon as it's made public, because that was awesome. Okay, so Jeff, what would you call your favorite panel?
I don't know if this is favorite, but probably the most surprising was Billy Boyd. Like, I expected at best to be, I'll be entertained by listening to a man with a Scottish accent. That'll be entertaining enough. But from the get-go, he was hilarious. I mean, it's easy to say Twisted Tunes was my favorite. It's easy to say that because we expect Twisted Tunes to be great. Billy Boyd, I had no expectations at all, and it was every answer, he was just hilarious. And he still answered the questions. And at one point when he called Dominic Monaghan, to talk about, do hobbits brush their teeth?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Was the funniest thing. And then Dominic, you could tell that they had either done this before or they're just such good friends that they just know how to play off each other. But like the first thing that came out of Billy's mouth was, "Hey Dominic, I'm in the bathtub with 5,000 other people." And he's like, "What? Why are you there?" He's like, "I just put on an electric blanket and I've roasted some vegetables and I have drank in half a bottle of wine. Where are you?
You said you'd be here by 5.
He's like, "I meant 5 o'clock on Monday." He's like, "Just put the vegetables in a Tupperware. They can be okay." He's like, "I'm fine. I'll just finish the bottle of wine." And then he says, "Hey, by the way, do you think hobbits brush their teeth?" And he's like, "That's a great question." Oh my gosh. It was so funny. It was so funny. Oh, he was hilarious.
And then he also sang, I don't know the name of it, but the song.
Both of the songs.
He sang a song from Lord of the Rings specifically that he wrote. And then he sang "Hit Me Baby One More Time," which
was totally unexpected. Like somebody shouted it out in the crowd and he was like, "Did you just," and he didn't say "Hit Me Baby One More Time," but he thought he heard him say that. And he pulled out his guitar and he was going to play. So the song at the end of The Hobbit, he sang. And then he also sang the song from Lord of the Rings that he sings to the steward.
Oh, you see, I didn't know right? the other so song
they,
he sang.
They was... are both. Yeah, they're both from. They're both from the Lord of the Rings / Hobbit movies. And yeah, and then so he sang both of those and it was amazing. Like I got chills listening to him sing both of them. But the guy screamed out, "Hey, blah, blah, blah," and I don't remember what he says, but he's like, "Did you just say 'Hit Me Baby One More Time'?" And he started playing his guitar and then started singing 'Hit Me Baby One More Time'. And you like I kept expecting him to stop after like one cadence or maybe one verse. But he sang the whole song. Like he just kept going and going. And I was like, okay, he's going to stop and say, "Ah, that was fun." But no, he finished the song. And then he was like, that was really unexpected.
Okay. So part of me wonders if he had that planned the whole time and like he didn't actually hear that, but are you going to argue with him?
Well, I heard the guy yell and it sounded like he said something like, "Hit me baby." One
I heard a
time,
couple people yell, "Play Freebird."
Too.
Well, you know, here's the thing about the good panels. The good panels are done by the people because they get asked the same questions a million times. The good people are the ones who can act like it's the first time they have been asked that question and act like they are just brand new and you are getting a completely unique experience. Absolutely. So I bet you he's played "Hit Me Baby One More Time" at another convention.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, he was so good. That panel was so good. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I've heard that from lots of people. I missed that one. But I heard that he is just, you know, people love him now because of that.
One of the questions at the panel was, it is widely known that when people or celebrities say, "Hey, who is somebody at a con that you have taken to?" Your name comes up the majority of the time. And why is that? Like, that was a question that somebody asked him. Yeah. It's just obvious that he knows what he's doing. He's an entertainer. And
well, he had to have been doing this stuff for as long as Lord of the Rings has been a thing, right?
Yeah. So we're talking like 15 years now here, right?
I remember getting pulled out of elementary school to go see the second movie. That dates me. But, you know, it's still...
I was in college.
Like I said, I'm significantly younger.
So Billy Boyd was Jeff's favorite panel. Nick, what was your favorite panel?
Okay, so Billy Boyd and Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, were two of my favorites. And we already talked about Twisted Tunes. So I'm going to go to a more obscure one that was really cool but didn't relate to me a lot. And so I actually left a little bit in the middle of it and then came back to it because I was like, no, that was good. I'm going to go back. And it was the Larry Correia MHI panel. And it was specifically how to write action and write books. So I went in there and I was like, this is going to be about, you know, this is Larry Correia and I love him and I love the way he talks and I love his presentation about stuff. And he was talking a lot about writing, which I don't do. But it was really cool to get an insight to how his brain works when he is writing his novels and how thoughtful he is and mindful he is of his audience. And one of the things that a lot of people criticize him for is that
he overexplains guns.
Monster Hunter. Exactly. But he actually explained that. He said, okay, so when I first wrote Monster Hunter International, I self-published it. And I self-published it and put it on the internet in gun forums. That's where I started putting my books. And so I purposely put what he quote-unquote called gun porn into his books because that was his audience. And he even admitted, I did too much of that in Monster Hunter International. And that's why I don't do it in my you know, in the books after. Like, and I've noticed that too. After Monster Hunter International, once you get to Vendetta and Alpha and, you know, all of those other ones, it's not this book, you know, this gun with this sight and this blah, 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 and this handle and this stuff. It's this gun, you know? And it's still, I have no idea what that gun looks like, but okay, it's Larry Kuria, but it's not this specific, like every single part of the gun so that you can imagine it. And he talked about that. He said, when you're writing a book, you need to consider these things. He's like, if I wrote an MH, you know, if I wrote a Monster Hunter book and there was not a fight scene every, you know, two chapters at least, my readers would go, quote unquote, ape shiz. You know, like, he's like, I would not be able to sell books anymore because I know that's what the people who are reading these books want. And he says, and so when I wrote Son of the Black Sword, that's a different type of book. And so, you know, I wrote it in a specific way that caters to those type of readers and those type of people that like books like that.
You know what I find really interesting about that is I didn't get a chance to go to any of his panels that I wanted to go to, but I made it a point to stop by the author booth that he was at and talk to him for a minute. And he talked about some of those exact same things. He talked about how, you know, when he was writing, because I talked to him about Grimnoir because that's the one that I fell in love with. And he was like, I wrote this for this part. And, you know, he was talking about how he knew that people were going to want certain things. And so he figured out ways to put that in there. And then we started talking about audiobooks and Larry Stranger came up. And he, you know, I asked him,
Tom Stranger.
So did you write that planning Adam Baldwin to read it? Or was that just a happy thing that you were able to happen? Because Adam Baldwin is a character in the book. And, you know, he says to me that he went to Audible and said, hey, have you ever had Adam Baldwin read anything? Because he had a chance to meet Adam Baldwin. If I had to guess, I would say it was at the Salt Lake Comic Con that was here. But he, and they were like, no, we really want him to do something. And so Larry Kuria just kind of connected them together and said, here you go. Here's his contact information. Here's how you talk to him about it. Because, you know, he was like, he would be an awesome narrator. And so a few months later, Audible contacted him and said, hey, we are doing an exclusive with Adam Baldwin and we want you to write it. Do you have anything for Adam Baldwin? And so he sent them a couple ideas, you know, for short stories and novellas and stuff that Adam Baldwin could read. And they came back to him and said, hey, how about this Larry Stranger character that's on your blog? Because he's blogged that story, or at least part of that story before. And Adam Baldwin was a character. And so he's like, yeah, I could do more with that. And so he expanded the story a little bit. And he wrote that specifically for Adam Baldwin. And, you know, he said that there were things that he put in there knowing that Adam Baldwin was going to read it. And then he said there was one thing, like Barack Obama voice. He's like, I didn't know he could do that. I put that in there and he could do it. And it just made him laugh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he then talked about how, you know, the same kind of thing happened with Bronson Pinchot, the guy who narrates the Grimnoir books. He was like, after a certain point of time, you start to get those characters' voices in your head. And he laughs how now he hears, you know, he was listening to a promo for The Last Ship and he heard Larry Stranger coming out of Adam Baldwin, because Adam Baldwin didn't read it straight up as Adam Baldwin or Bronson Pinchot, but he was like, NCIS was on in the background and all of a sudden I heard Jake Sullivan and I turn around and there's Bronson on TV. He's playing a serial killer.
Yeah.
So he was laughing how, you know, the voices that go to his characters end up in other places, and sometimes they're in commercials. And yeah.
He always gets great narrators for all of his books. I have not been disappointed with any of the readers of his books.
Exactly. And, you know, the one thing I told him was like, man, I wish you had like a really nice Grimnoir book here. I'd buy that, have you sign it. But I don't have any books of yours because I buy them all on Audible. And so he saw my name badge and he was like, oh, well, here. And he said, takes my lanyard and takes a Sharpie and signed my guest circle name badge. So he was an awesome guy. I loved it.
Yeah, he's always, I've always made it a point to at least go and see him or go to a panel, because he always just makes you feel good. He's just one of those people that is just really smart and fun to talk to.
You know that kind of goes back to the, you know, the Jess Harnell and his friends panel that we were talking about, because somebody asked Jess, how do you be amazing? And he basically boiled it down to, you got to be grateful. People don't think you're amazing unless you're grateful. And that's exactly how I felt from Larry Kuria. Like, I went up and I said, hey, I am a big fan of yours. I love your stories. And he just got this smile on his face and he just started talking. And I think it was his agent or maybe his wife at the booth was like, and now he's never going to stop.
Yeah.
Because he's a talkative guy.
Long time ago, I posted a picture of my son wearing a onesie that we had made that said Monster Hunter in Training and had the MHI like smiley face on it. And so the last con that I went to, I talked to him about that. I said, hey, you know, I just thought it was pretty funny and I thought I'd just post it on there to show you. And he was like, oh my gosh, I laughed. And I thought that was so cool. You know, and we, you know, started talking about my son and stuff. He's just so nice. He's just so cool. And he remembers what his fans do. And he loves that sort of stuff. And sometimes on his Facebook posts, too, he'll be like, okay, guys, please do not tag me in anything that's MHI related unless it's really MHI related. Or, you know, if it's just a cool gun, don't tag me in it because I have way too many things to try to respond to. And I really try hard to respond to all of them if I can. You know, but it's getting really hard to do that now that you guys are just like, hey, this is a cool gun. Larry Correa will like it. You know, like, so yeah, he's just like, it just, you know, home it in to anything that's related to my books or like awards that I am winning or something. Now, something that's really cool is that that night, Larry Correa went home and found out that he had won an award after Comic-Con. He won the Dragon Award.
That's cool.
And he commented on how he didn't think that he would win because Jim Butcher was on it. And Jim Butcher said, vote, you know, like they were kind of in this thing where like, oh, no, you should vote for Larry or no, you should vote for, you know, Jim. And he thought it was really classy of Jim Butcher to do that. And he was really honored to win that award. And he found out. Yeah. He said he went home and slept for 11 hours after the con.
I tried to do that.
Yeah, I couldn't either. Yeah, someone woke me up.
I got different news. Another panel that was kind of surprisingly good was Danny Trejo. Like he was,
I heard that
super
too.
Entertaining.
Gosh, he was so cool, and he like you could just see that he genuinely was just like, I am so lucky to be where I am. I'm going to work as much as I can. It doesn't matter how much money I make. It doesn't matter how much recognition I get. I just love movies, and I'm going to be in them, and I have a lot of fun while I'm doing it, and I'm just going to enjoy this. And he has led a really tragic life, and so it makes sense why he would have that type of mentality about being a famous actor.
So funny thing about Danny Trejo is there was a, I think, I don't know if she's a staff member or an intern, but she's at the office a lot, and she's like 17 or 18 years old, and she was helping get some stuff put together. She's like, who is Danny Trejo? And so somebody starts talking about all the Machete movies and all of the, you know, the slasher stuff that he's been in.
Desperado.
And
Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, he was the head on the tortoise. You know, she had no idea. She had no idea. And so I looked at her. I was like, based off of your age, you probably know him from Spy Kids. And she's like, oh, Uncle Machete.
Wait, is this character really named Uncle Machete?
That was something he kind of...
Now I have to check.
I don't know. That's what she said. I'm pretty sure that it is.
Just combining the Spy Kids universe with the Machete universe.
He had so many funny stories. And he, like, somebody would ask him a question. And these are the type of panels I love, where they ask him a question like, hey, what do you think of, you know, Robert Rodriguez? And he starts going off on this story for like 5 minutes just about the most random stuff, and you get little tidbits of like who he really is, other than I really love Robert Rodriguez. It was an honor to work with him, and I loved working with him in the movie, and it's great. Next question, please. Like, he talked about like how, and this was a really funny story. He said, I've worked with Robert Rodriguez on multiple films, and one time when we were filming, I don't remember which one it was, Dusk Till Dawn, Desperado, whatever it was, he said, I invited my family to come to the thing, and my mom walked up and she said, who is that? And he went, oh, that's Robert Rodriguez. And she said, that's your cousin. And he went, hey, dude, you're my cousin. Like, and then he's like, oh, it was during Desperado. Because then he went over and he said, dude, we're cousins. And he went over there and he's like, we need to make that limousine scene longer now. You know, like, he's just like, it's so funny. And then there's another part where somebody asked him, hey, are you going to be in the new, you know, Robert Rodriguez movie? And he's like, I didn't know he was doing a movie. And then he like yells across the thing, hey, I want to be in your movie. And he's like, okay. And I got in the movie. Like, he's just that type of guy. And he's so funny. Like, he was telling all these stories about just random stuff. Somebody asked him if he liked being in dramatic roles. And he was like, well, there's this one time that I was in this movie with Maggie Gyllenhaal, and she was this drug addict, and I was the neighbor that was like helping her out. And she comes over and I like clean her up and put her in the bathtub. And during the entire scene, they said, okay, Danny, we need you to be sympathetic. Why do you have this huge grin on your face? And he's like, dude, I want to get in the bathtub with her. You know, just like stuff like that. He was just so funny. He's like, that was the hardest thing I've ever done because I was just sitting there thinking, man, there's a naked chick in the bathtub next to me. You know, like
having to do a scene with Amber Heard and go action. And she starts giggling. Like, why are you laughing? Because Danny won't stop saying, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God.
He had so many just awesome stories like that. Just one after another, after another.
How he just kind of fell into acting. How it was like, hey, you look like a prison inmate. You think you can play one? Yeah, I think I can. He took off his shirt and like, whoa, hold on. And he got moved from one extra to another because he had real prison tattoos.
And then one guy said, I recognize that tattoo.
We got the same prison.
And it was another guy that was at the prison. And he's like, you're a boxing champion. He's like, you're a boxer. And so they hired him as a boxer to train Eric Roberts how to box. And this is how it went for him. It was like, hey, you want to be an extra? How much does it pay? $50. Great, I'll do it. And then he goes in, and then they're like, we want you to train him to be a boxing guy. How much does that pay? $325 a day. What? How much do you want me to beat him up?
I can beat him up in 8 minutes for $300.
He was like, $325 a day? Man, you know, I'll do it. You know, like, and that's how his career went. It was just like, he was just willing to do whatever people asked him to do. And then he commented on this little, this one of the first times that he ever got interviewed for a show, because he was an extra, like extras all the time. And then finally, he had a speaking part slash like he was one of the people to be interviewed. First day out of interview school, but the first thing she said is, Danny, are you scared of being typecast because the only thing you've ever been was a prison inmate? And he looked at her and said,
I am a prison inmate.
Like, I am a prison inmate. I am a convict. So no, I am not sad about that at all. And you could, like, he was just so entertaining, so fun. And he was so thankful for what he has been given. And he talked about how he still does work because his original love was to help out kids who, you know, are addicted to drugs or have trouble with youth. And so he still works like the majority of his time as a drug counselor. And then he does the acting on the side. And he said, the reason why kids listen to me now is because I've done the acting. And so I use this as a way to help my true passion, my true love of helping out, you know, youth and stuff like that. And it was just like, dude, you're just the coolest dude ever. Like, you're just awesome. And I was so glad I went to that panel. I was on the fence about it.
I think what tipped it over for you was, yeah, I need to charge my phone.
That's literally why I went to the panel. I was like, there's nothing else to do. I need to charge my phone. There'll be a free plug in, you know, in the grand ballroom. Both me and Lena were like, yeah, this, we want to see this one anyway. So let's.
Yeah, I was going to go regard
that. Everyone that I've talked to who has gone to his panel has said that he is just a great guy. I don't know. I'm torn because Comic-Con, I love being behind the scenes at Comic-Con, but I miss being able to go to every single panel and see every single cool person out there. But, you know, I guess that doesn't really work because there's too much to do. We met up with Todd from the Protagonist podcast. He's never been to one of these things before. And so he's like, what should I be looking for? And so at the very beginning of the day, I was trying to show him all briefly a little bit of everything until I was, you know, finally like, no, you just need to check out some panels. And he went to one. He was like, yeah, it was kind of boring. So I left and went to this other one. And he went to it and then he loved it. And then, we went to the voice actors one. And, you know, I said, you need to make sure you go to these voice actors. And so he went to the voices of Star Wars and he was like, that was amazing.
Yeah, I think his comment was, I can see how it is very easy for you guys to love these guys.
Yes.
Like that, yeah. That's what he said. And I was like, that's a very profound way of saying it. But yes, it's very awesome.
I've been to so many of these. I was to the point of saying, you know what, I'm gonna stop going. And then all of a sudden it went like the exact opposite. But I was going to stop going because I had been to a bunch of them and I'm like, you know, I don't need to spend the money on this or the time. I can skip a couple of them. And then it was really neat to see somebody who this was their first time doing it. So that was a really cool experience that I got to have. And I mean, I have a ton of experiences. And I want to share a couple of them in a minute. But experience-wise, because there are things that happen outside of the panels too. Nick, I let Jeff go first last time, so I'm going to let you go first. What was your favorite experience? Because you said there was one thing that rivaled the Mark Hamill panel.
Okay, so this happened on the very first day, and as many of you know, I love Samurai Jack. I love the show. Absolutely love it. So on the very first day, I said, okay, the one signature that I want to get is Phil LaMarr, and he is the voice of Samurai Jack. And I said, okay, I want to like the one autograph that I'm going to get, the splurge, you know, whatever, I want to get a signed, you know, Samurai Jack from Phil LaMarr. And because the line was smaller on Thursday, I got there. We walked over there. The first time that we walked over there, the lines were pretty short. And I said, okay, this is going to be the best time for me to get this because the line's so short and I don't have to wait as long. But he wasn't actually at his booth yet. But the lady said, oh, he's just on break. He'll be back any second. And, you know, it was like 20 minutes.
You would have waited longer.
It didn't matter to me. It didn't matter to me because
I've waited longer for a signature.
What I wanted. Yeah. Yeah. This is what I wanted. And I was really excited to get it. And so I went up there and, you know, I understand that there's people behind me, so I don't ever really try, unless there's like no one behind me, to ask questions that are going to be lengthy or anything like that, because I try to respect the people behind me that, you know, they want to also,
you know, get a signature and they don't want to be in line for a billion years, right? And so I go up there and I say, you know what, I'm a really big fan of Samurai Jack. And he's like, oh, that's awesome and blah, blah, blah. And this is cool. And I said, even, you know, it. I just feel like a lot of the times people kind of missed out on this one. And he says, yeah, I understand that as well. And I said, you know, I love it. And a lot of the reason that I love it is because I'm an artist. And even when I teach art or when I try to explain to people about art, a lot of the times I will say, if you want a good example of color theory or of color, you know, or storyboarding or anything like that, Samurai Jack just did it so masterfully that you can learn from that show. And he said, and I just think that Gendy is just one of the best animators out there. And he started opening up to me and he said, and he told me something that I had never heard of. Like I'd never read, I've done a lot of research and stuff. And he said, one of the things that's really cool and that I felt was really amazing with Samurai Jack is that Gendy was just so good at saying, okay, this is my vision. But then what he would do that is unprecedented in cartoons is he would say, okay, I am going to allow the storyboard artist to write the story. And so every single episode was written by a storyboard artist instead of a writer. And that's part of the reason that Samurai Jack has this different feel throughout the entire show. Like one episode will be about a party rave, and then the next episode will be this like, you know, homage to the old samurai movies where there's like three lines of dialogue and they're fighting these three archers on the top of this mountain that no one can defeat. And so,
you know, it sounds a lot like the Marvel method of writing where the artist dictates how the story flows.
And so he commented on how his brilliance while working on that show was not that, you know, he had a brilliant idea and that he was this visionary, is that he gave, you know, creative freedom to so many people, and then he was able to harness that creative freedom and bring it, you know, into this brilliant movie or, you know, this brilliant series. And I was sitting there just being like, this is what Comic-Con is all about. Like, I just had a moment, you know, with somebody that I admire and that I love and that, you know, is something that I just cherish. And this guy took the time to just give me just even a little tidbit. And that's how long the conversation was. You know, it was like, this is really cool. And I said, how's the new series? And he said, I recorded it yesterday and it is amazing. That's all he said to me, and that was enough. I was just like, this guy loves Samurai Jack as much as I do. And later on in the panel, he commented on how he was sad because a lot of the reason why Samurai Jack was canceled is because Gendy was taken off of that project to be put on Star Wars Clone Wars. And then when that was so successful, Samurai Jack just ended because of it. So it wasn't that Samurai Jack was like not successful, it's that when you have Star Wars, that's what you go with. You know, Cartoon Network's like, Star Wars, yes, we'll do that. Samurai Jack's great, but sorry, it's Star Wars. You know, like, and so that even made me more happy too, because I was like, how did the show fail? Like, I'm watching it and I'm just like, no, this is a travesty. And that was a reason, you know, that I got by being there and listening to him say it, and a trusted source, not just some random person on the internet saying blah, 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 and you always take it with a grain of salt, but somebody who was there and had it. And after I left that, it was one of those moments where I was just completely satisfied. And I was like, I don't know if anything can top this at the con, because it fulfilled one of my, like, it fulfilled me personally. Like a part of me was just like, yes, this is like worth the entire, you know, experience just to have this moment. And, you know, it's like the Spock moment or whatever. Like it was my aha moment at the con. And, you know, it'll be a highlight for me forever. And every time I look at that signature, I'm going to think about that and just be like, you know what? I love him even more. And now I remember his name. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he just made a profound effect on me personally as a fan. And that is what Comic-Con is all about.
Okay. So I am going to segue into mine. I'm going to make Jeff, you're going to go last now.
Oh, drat.
I know. But mine just kind of ties into Nick's a little bit. It is not as profound or deep, but it involves voice actors. And it was so funny. So I was in the office and I was like, okay, I'm going to go up and see the Voices of Marvel panel. And so I get out of the office and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to use the restroom first. Go to use the restroom. Coming in right behind me is Jess Harnell. And I'm all like, that's Jess Harnell. I want to talk to him and be like, dude, I'm a big fan. But I'm like, he's a human being. I'm going to let him pee in peace. So we walk into the bathroom. I'm keeping my head down because I know if I look at him, I'm going to try to make eye contact and talk to him. And that's not cool to do in the bathroom, in the men's room at least.
No eye contact.
Exactly. So we're in the bathroom. All of a sudden, I hear this woman scream, oh my gosh, I'm peeing next to Jess Harnell. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is the men's room.
And I turn my head, and there's Fred Tatasciore.
Tatasciore.
Tatasciore. Thank you. I'm just going to let you pronounce it for me from now on, Jeff. So this man, he is not a small man. He is 6'1" and probably like 280 pounds. He's a big guy. He does the voice of the Incredible Hulk. He's a big guy. But then all of a sudden, you know, he pulls out this woman's voice and like acts like he's starstruck. And then, you know, without skipping a beat, Jess Harnell pulls out Wacko Warner's voice and he's like, and the guy peeing next to me, something just turned green, but I'm not going to say what.
Oh, jeez. And right there you're like, why aren't I recording this?
Kind of is like, would it be weird to pull out my cell phone in the bathroom? But so they go back and forth for a couple minutes in different character voices until somebody's finally like, I'm having a hard time being here, guys, because we were all just laughing in the bathroom. So they're, oh, sorry. And so they stop. The funny thing was, earlier in the day, I was walking around in the back and he's there, and you know, we're both big guys, so I stepped out of the way so he could get by, and he nodded at me appreciatively. Fred Tatasciore, great guy. And then we're going back the opposite way and we cross again. And so he looks at me, he's like, see, now I'm just stalking you. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's how it is. We're not going to say it's the other way around. But, and so then we're washing our hands in the bathroom and he looks over and he's like, see, I even stalked you into the bathroom. He remembered who I was, and it was really funny. We went up there, so I went and got found a seat, and just had a fun panel. And it was they're just great guys. You know, I think that's my favorite experience of the convention. That and you know, just getting to see some of these celebrities who we idolize just be human beings. Millie Bobby, who plays Eleven in Stranger Things, she is the most adorable little girl in the world. She is just such a happy person. She has a crush on the Vampire Diaries guys, I'm pretty sure, from some
Ian
things that I saw.
Smotherhunder. I don't know.
Yeah, Ian Somerhalder and Paul.
Somerhalder.
What, Paul Wesley's not hard to say, but Somerhalder, is that okay?
Yeah, Ian Somerhalder.
Yeah, so
he's the dreamy one with the dark.
It's funny
complexion.
Because she kind of fangirled out about seeing where their booths were going to be like close to hers, and I could see her dad kind of being like, oh, please don't let anyone of note and importance see that. And then I saw it, and I'm not of note and importance, so. But she's a Vampire Fans Diary or Vampire Diary fan.
Yeah,
you had her.
I thought it was cool that she wore the shirt that says Salt Lake Comic Con in the writing of Stranger Things. I'm sure they just gave it to her, but she was like sweet and put on the shirt. Like she wore that a lot. It was pretty awesome. Like just
an adorable little girl. And so many of the celebrities, Sean Mayer, I saw him interacting with some people, and he was just and it was in a situation where. It was not like a sitting at his table interaction. He was just interacting in other places, and he just seemed like a nice guy. Like that, because that is really where you get to see the difference between. Because a lot of people will be nice to you when you're giving them their money, but then behind the scenes, if they're a jerk, I can see that, and I can see people being a jerk.
There were a few of those at this con. I'm not saying that every celebrity is going to be awesome like this. I'm not going to name names, but there was a few people that we were like, really? Okay, the end.
Yeah. Well, you know, Michael Rooker,
he was
a great guy too. Like most celebrities were not doing meet and greets. You had to buy something or leave. And he was like, no, come to my booth. I want to talk to you. And he took selfies with people. A bunch of them were free. I think he charged for some of them, but most of the selfies were free. He wanted to shake your hand and talk to you. Lou Ferrigno was very similar. You know, just seeing getting a chance to see these celebrities interacting with other human beings and just being funny and happy and just genuine people. That was probably my highlight of this convention, was being able to see some of these celebrities in situations where they were not taking your money, but still being just great people and fun people and just making you happy. So, Jeff, you said you had a couple experiences that rivaled the Mark Hamill panel.
Yeah, okay, rival might be a big word, but you know, I have the poster for the documentary, I Know That Voice, and all four of the guys who I needed this year, each one of them commented. Phil Lamar was just taken aback, like, how did you even get this? You know, I got a lot of that. And Fred, who we were just talking about, even said, oh, has Johnny seen this? And it took me a second to realize, oh, John DiMaggio, you know, the voice of Bender and the director of this movie. No, unfortunately, he hasn't seen it.
Tell him to come to Salt Lake Comic Con, and then he will see it.
That's what I hear a lot. I say that a lot, actually, unfortunately. Might be considered rude. I think Nick said it this time. So, and even when we went to get that soundbite, he looked at me and thought, don't I know you? Like, where do I know you from? Like, oh, I had the I Know That Voice poster. Oh, yeah, yeah. And so, like, even that was cool. But probably But I get that every year I do the voice actor stuff. Probably the most...
I get that. I'm just cool.
Well, I mean,
like
it's... apparently, I found a very rare poster that I'm having them deface with their names. So many names.
And, like, every single one of them is proud to be a part of it, too. Like you can see that they're like, this is awesome. This is a story about my craft and what I love. And you found this, and you're getting all of these amazing people who I consider...
Colleagues.
You know, colleagues and amazing people and that are my friends to sign this awesome thing. Like, it really is awesome, Jeff.
I'm fairly proud of it. But probably the newest thing for me this year was I did an actual cosplay. I got a leather jacket and a baseball bat, and I walked around as Negan. And it was kind of... It was different for me because I had an extra prop besides just my bag. But walking around the floor... The first thing I did was I went straight to Artist Alley, and I was in the time where Multipass couldn't get in, so it was just us, VIP and Gold. And walking through Artist Alley, almost empty, with a whole bunch of people sitting in front of you, looking at you in a way that, like, come talk to me in a way, like, come buy stuff, wait, like, not just looking at you. I don't know how to describe it. But walking around with a baseball bat over your shoulder with a whole bunch of people sitting down, like, you really felt like Negan in that scene.
I felt like Negan. I wanted like, to, I wanted like, to introduce them to Lucille.
Like, oh, man, I have all the power in this situation. And there were a couple people who I honestly didn't expect anything from it. Like, my jacket doesn't look right like Negan. I was wearing just my tennis shoes because I didn't find boots in time. You know, my baseball bat looks good at a distance, but up close you can kind of tell it's just contact paper. But it was just, I was just amazed at the number of people that went, oh, cool, Negan, and whatnot. And one artist even asked, so who did you kill? I was like, oh, I kind of wish I would have had an answer prepared for this. But
that's hilarious.
Yeah, and like I said, I was wearing a leather jacket indoors. I understand there's cosplayers out there who are wearing way more elaborate stuff. I'm just saying, for a first time, leather jacket probably wasn't the smartest idea. But it was still fun, and I'm going to do it again. Next Comic-Con, I'll definitely wear it again, maybe for a longer day. Hopefully if I can find either a lighter or better looking jacket, because mine's just a leather jacket. It doesn't actually look anything like Negan's, but you know, once you have Lucille, you could be wearing pretty much anything.
Jeff, where you are constantly upgrading your costume.
Yeah. Funny enough, I was at the Nerd Store booth and Pat from the Nerd Dome came up to me and said, I like your Lucille. And then she pointed up, do you like mine? Clearly trying to get me to buy something. And I just turned to her and go, hey, you wouldn't have to be Spectacular Panda Pat, would you? And her face just goes, okay, like, you know who I am already. It's kind of funny. Yeah. I actually met a couple people from Nerd Dome.
They're a cool group over there. Okay, so we had a good con, I think. Makes you want to have a time turner.
Larry Correa brought that up in his panel, and he was making fun of it. He was saying
the one thing that
he was just like, you know, you don't, he actually brought this up in his thing. He's like, you don't want to introduce something into your books that people could solve the entire book with. You know, like
not destroy.
He said, you know, once you make something too powerful, it makes it really hard to bring it down. And so you've got to create levels of bringing power up. And he actually brought up limits. Sally Faye. And he said, that's the only time that I made somebody like almost all powerful by the end. But that's something, you know, that was something he brought up, but he commented on what, you know, the majority of Harry Potter fans have said is all you have to do is say, oh, I've got a time turner. I'm just going to go back and find Tom Riddle and then just say, hey, is Tom Riddle here? Bam. And then just kill him and then just leave.
The let's kill Hitler paradox.
Yeah. So
I've got a gun. You've got a time machine.
Yeah. No, I loved this convention. I had a blast. I tallied it up today. I walked over 120,000 steps and over 60 miles.
Good for you.
But it was a blast. I have registered the domain name, reconexperience.com. Experience the convention again. I'm going to do something with that. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do yet. But I was like, I like this. We are going to do this. So
cool.
Check that out in the near future. I'll have some stuff up there. I've got a couple things up there right now just as like little test items. But anyway, so just want to say thank you for listening to the Fandom Podcast. We love that you spend your time with us. This one's probably going to be a little bit of a longer one, but like I said, it's a binge experience of 3 days that we've cut down into quite a bit of less time. So into less than 2 hours. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. If you have any feedback to this, if you went to the convention and you were like, no, this is my highlight, let me share you mine, go ahead and send that in to feedback@fandompodcast.com, or you can go over to our website, fandompodcast.com/contact,
or over to facebook.com/fandompodcast. We love getting feedback. If you want to contribute to the Random Fandom, you can use those same methods and tell us about a book, TV show, movie, broken cars that you take out on dates.
It was random, and it is, you know, a fandom.
It's it's like fandom, but random. just go ahead and send that in to us. And until next time,
Haku! I did look it up. Danny Trejo's character in Spy Kids is called Machete.
May the fandom be with you.
And you know that Joker must love Comic Cons because to him, it's all an homage to me. Yes.